Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hello and welcome to GoTo Unscripted. I'm here at Yale London. I'm joined by the brilliant Jessica Kerr, Engineering Manager of Developer Relations at Honeycomb.
Great. Hello. It's good to meet you, Jessica.
It's great to meet you. And you're joining me fresh from your keynote.
Right. It went really well. It's so fun. I love going first.
Yes. Get it out of the way.
Yes.
Early.
Yes.
So your keynote was talking about going deeper on gamification. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means?
Sure. First of all, we look at gamification of our work specifically and go, because gamification takes the superficial characteristics of games, scores, achievements, competition. They're like, well, games have these and games are fun. So if we just slap these on something else, maybe it'll be fun. No, there's a different kind of satisfaction that we get from our work than from a game. Mm-hmm. Because at work, everything is very interdependent. Mm. That's why we have teams. That's why we have companies. And our work has a richness to it. Software development, it's not just programming anymore. You know, it used to be just solving puzzles, mm-hmm. And something you could do alone. But now everything that we do has consequences that are just broader and more interesting. Like, yes, there's some consequences if we implement a feature, there's some consequences for the customers. There's also consequences for every other feature and every other feature we might implement, and the data in the database. And then all the other teams whose software interacts with ours. What we do affects our future. Hmm. So reducing it to a number is really destructive.
It's interesting because it sounds like, we've seen a real growth of these sort of like systems design and systems thinking, and a growing recognition of the interdependence of everything. Is that kind of
right
what we're talking about here?
Yes. So I read a lot about systems thinking.
Okay,
and it's interesting. Systems thinking as a field mm-hmm. has grown from being you can't say reductionist with systems thinking because the point is it. Is the relationships between the parts. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, systems thinking has been like, oh, well, now that we've recognized that it's the relationships, we can model those. We have computers. You know, and so there's still this attempt to get control. Mm-hmm. Hard systems thinking, this is the general category of just recognizing that it's a system and also trying to master it. Mm-hmm. But the more modern forms of systems thinking get into soft systems thinking and socio-technical systems. And Nora Bateson's term simathesy is my favorite because it means learning systems of learning parts. You cannot hope to master that. You cannot hope to model it because the system is becoming a new system every day, just like us. Our software mm-hmm. is becoming something new and we are learning more and becoming different and gaining skills or vengefulness. As we go, right? So you can't control mm-hmm. the socio-technical system that is a software team.
You're talking about the illusion of control. It just kind of took me back to a couple of like my favorite song lyrics there. Just that came up in my head. Sort of going full unscripted with this. But you kind of were hinting at some of the pitfalls that people can face when they try to implement gamification and don't necessarily take into account the differences between developing software
and playing a game or even sales. Someone tweeted mm-hmm. in response to my keynote that like a manager was like, competition makes people better. So I try to introduce friction to my team. And you know, if you come from a sales background, I don't understand it because I don't enjoy competition that way. Mm-hmm. But salespeople thrive on it. But they have a different value system. There's different value systems for different, like, what does Luhmann, there's a philosopher named Luhmann, I think, who divides us into functional systems as opposed to classes. And so, mm-hmm. like, doctors care about, does it help? Mm-hmm. And lawyers care about, is it legal? Could I defend it in court?
Yeah.
And salespeople care about, did it close? You know, did I make money on it? And software developers care about, does it run? That's like, it always boils down to that, right? Yeah. We can always take it to the computer and we can test it, we can run it, we can get yes or no. And that's our value system. And it turns out that competition doesn't help with that, because we can make more interesting things run and run in more interesting ways collaboratively. Mm-hmm. And competition seems to work for sales. Okay. Let them use that. But yeah, imposing that on software engineering doesn't work.
Interesting. Yeah, no, that's spot on. Everything is, when we do step back and look at things, the amount of importance that incentive plays into how we operate is, can't really be underestimated, right? And that's kind of a guess.
Yeah. And yet, in software development, where we're looking at things richly and widely and trying to think about more consequences. Mm-hmm. I think incentives are mostly a distraction. Like, if you've got, because our job is to figure out, is partly to figure out what we need to do. Our job is constantly making decisions.
Yes.
What to type, what to test next, what to look at next, how to add clues for ourselves and when, what to prioritize. And any particular incentive is usually a distraction. If we have an incentive to, I don't know, close more tickets, then we're going to close them in ways that don't help in the future, mm-hmm. that lead to more tickets. If we have an incentive to make more commits, then maybe we'll make smaller commits. Okay, win. I'm okay with that. I don't see any negative there.
I
think most of what you can do to help software development is removing obstacles, is smoothing things out, is making it easier to find out what's happening in production, mm-hmm. making it easier to respond to a page, making it easier to talk to each other, making it easier to find out whether the thing runs.
And that's where observability comes into the mix.
Oh,
right?
True. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I work at Honeycomb in part because I believe very deeply in observability. Mm-hmm. Like, part of the magic of software development is we can inject those clues for ourselves. Not just does it run, but how does it run? What mm-hmm. is it doing? Because there's so many different things it could do. And Honeycomb helps with that. Honeycomb mm-hmm. Helps us surface those clues once we've stuck them in there for ourselves.
And it takes, from what I understand, it takes the process of discovery when it comes to an outage from just, okay, it stopped running to, okay, why did it stop running?
Right.
When did it stop running? Who did the thing to create it, to create the issue?
And like traditional monitoring can often tell you when it stopped running.
Yeah.
Because it's counting things. But why? I mean, in a lot of places you have to go to logs. And going to logs works just fine if you're the developer who wrote those logs. Or you've spent years reading those logs and you know what they say and you know how to notice what's missing, for instance. But to a new developer coming to the team, logs are not helpful, whereas distributed traces are. Distributed traces have a structure to them that can teach people what's happening in the system. So it sets people on a path to understanding. It gives people like a concrete reference to talk about together. So we don't have as many whiteboards anymore, but you know what's better than a whiteboard? A literal description of what just happened in production.
Sounds so helpful. I'm just looking back on all of these hypnotoad moments I had looking at logs, thinking, I'm sure I'll just understand this. It'll just become obvious, right?
And the weird thing is, eventually it does.
Yeah.
Years later, if you look at it enough, you do develop a feel for it. But traces are right there. And Honeycomb even has our one of our killer features that nobody else has is, is Bubble Up, where you can say, okay, some requests are failing, some requests are not. What's different? And it'll be like, well, a lot more of the failing ones are in China. And you're like, well, but that's not my fault. Or a lot more of the failing ones have are for a very large customer.
Ah.
Or for a particular customer. Or for this one user on this one device. You can narrow it down like that if that's the failure condition, because Honeycomb goes and it compares all the fields.
Mm.
And the other reason we can do that is because we store all the fields. We don't index any of them.
Nice.
We indexed on timestamp and a little bit of special handling for trace ID. But that's it. All your fields are created equal. And so we can look at all of them as easily as any other and surface these really obscure, wow, I had no idea that discount code could make a difference here kind of thing.
And one of, I think, someone I met recently was, we were chatting about what they loved about Honeycomb, and they said that there's no sort of, there's no end point. It's very open world when it comes to observability. You can kind of zoom in as far as you need
to. That's a good phrase. Yeah. What specifically our product people talk about, they don't want any dead ends.
Yeah.
There's always, from a trace, you can get to graphs, and you can get to new queries. And from a graph, you can always get to a trace or to other graphs.
They're going full like Breath of the Wild with it. You can explore as many avenues as you like.
Yeah, which is fun because Breath of the Wild is one of the bases for Genshin Impact, which is the game I talk about the most in my keynote that I just did.
Oh, incredible.
Is that because I love the open worldness of it. I love that every mountain you see, you can also climb.
This is the exact reason why I have not finished a game in the last 3 years. Because I mean, what is finishing, you know, when it comes to video games?
It is, the best games are infinite games, right? They just keep going.
And one of the reasons why I was really excited to speak to you as well is because Honeycomb usually makes an appearance when we're at Launch Dark. We are a Honeycomb customer, and we I think we're also just big fans of understanding why the thing went wrong, and then using, hopefully, feature flags to be able to quickly enact on that.
Exactly. Observability and feature flags totally go well together. Because, well, for one thing, feature flags let you deploy faster. They take away the restriction of, well, you can't deploy this because marketing's not ready, or because this other piece doesn't hook up yet, or because the data hasn't been migrated, so feature flags let you work in much smaller steps, including adding observability, for instance. Although I don't know why you'd put that behind a feature flag. But also, you can see which feature flags are active. And Honeycomb can help you find the problem.
Yes.
But it has nothing to say about fixing it. But feature flags can help with that.
And if you are able to use like one of the integrations, I think we are both of companies works on, then you can be in that situation where if you fall below a certain metric, then you can trigger a flag to go off
into
a safe mode, which is quite nice.
That's true. You can that would make me really nervous. But safe mode, something like that.
Safe mode, yeah.
You could be like, okay, the load on our database is excessive. We're going to turn off recommendations or something.
Everyone is asleep and we need to let them sleep.
Yeah. Oh, and the one on the Honeycomb side, Launch Darkly sends notifications that we can display as markers on the graph. So you can see when a feature flag was flipped.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the slide that I always point to when I'm like, observability.
So it goes both ways.
So nice. What's the, I got quite excited when you talked about when you were speaking about your favorite video game, your favorite game. Is there a video game that you've played that's made you a better engineer?
Oh, a better engineer. Whatever my teammates are playing.
Aww.
Honestly, because if just like building a rapport with people, I don't know, I don't play Magic the Gathering, but if that's what people are doing, somebody's going to loan me a deck just happily. And the best was when he had a team that played Hearts together at lunch every day for like 5 years.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, it was amazing because we had all kinds of conventions and strategies and silly phrases. and things we made fun of each other for. That kind of rapport just smooths all kinds of communication.
Yeah.
It changes asking a question from, oh, do I want to bother this person? I see they're the last person to change this. It changes trepidation into anticipation. Like, yeah. Oh, I get to bug so-and-so. I'm going to tease him about this variable name.
Hey, how are you doing? Remember that thing? I feel like it also is really, playing games as a team also is great at uniting people around the one issue and reminding us that we are on the same mm-hmm. path to solving yeah. the same
Even if thing. It's a competitive game, mostly yeah. I play co-op games these days. Ever since COVID, I just want to play co-op games. But even playing competitively with a team, mm-hmm. when you're playing to play well mm-hmm. and not really caring whether you win, it's team building. Mm-hmm. But also, even if you don't play together, if you play the same games, then you can talk about them. That's why I play Genshin. It's because my kids talk about it all the time. And I wanted to be part of those conversations.
Oh, that's so wonderful. That's
yeah,
great.
And now I am. My teenager texts me, Mom, there's all these Hu Tao Albedo ships. What do you think of that? And I'm like, no, I don't think they would work together at all. those characters would just be at each other's throats all the time, mate.
Nice. At least you'd have like better conversations around like game mechanics with family members. I mean, I've got to say, I don't think I play any of the same games as my family yet. But it's probably because I'm like in this really lovely lull where I'm playing a lot of like this game called Coffee Talk.
Coffee Talk, I don't know that one.
People come into your cafe, tell you little stories and you make them drinks and they leave.
Well, are they real people or NPCs?
They are NPCs, unfortunately.
Low stress?
Yeah, I think so. You know, not like real users. Gosh, God forbid.
Not like people you have to like have manners with. Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
I do want to leave people with,
yep.
With more hope, because while on my talk about gamification, I'm super down on gamification.
Okay.
I'm very bullish on principles of game design.
Interesting.
Yes. Okay. That's the thing. It's like gamification is these superficial characteristics, but games do have something to teach us. Yeah. But we have to step back and look not at what tools do designers use mm-hmm. in the case of board games and card games and sports, yeah. But what questions do they ask? What are they trying to achieve? And they're trying to achieve an experience. And that's what I want to achieve in my team, an experience that also makes us better at our jobs every day.
That sounds rallying cry to join your team. That's excellent. What do you think people can take from, like, what did you want people to take from your discussion about game design to their teams? Like, how did you want to leave people inspired from this morning's session?
Some of it is recognizing that we have the ability to design the agency that our team adopts with goals, rules, and abilities, mm-hmm. Set goals that align with the company instead of numeric objectives that are small. And then if we don't have the abilities we need to fulfill those, if we don't have the knowledge, if we don't have the tooling, if we don't have the permissions to push to production or to look at production logs, work on that, or else de-scope the goals, or get the people that do have those permissions on the team, something to make the abilities match the goals. Mm. And then the rules that we follow, like the things we choose not to do, such as log directly into production, we need to agree on those mostly as norms. Some of them we enforce in software, like linting. I mean, if you're going to be an asshole, at least let a robot be the asshole. Mostly let the robot just do the commit and fix the stupid problems and don't bother me. But
yeah, choose bad RoboCop instead of bad cop. Sorry, that's a horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. But for things like, you know, what tools do we use? What variable naming conventions? What testing framework? When are we going to update what? Mm. Social norms are much more flexible for that than standards imposed from the ivory tower.
That's interesting because it sounds like implementing those measures will help people to believe that their efforts matter and to see evidence of that in the work that they produce. So is it
which measures?
Like believing that you're like tying your metrics to things that matter, like believing that you matter on your team. It seems like that's kind of what we're
enforcing. And a lot of things you can't measure but you can notice.
Okay.
So I don't want people to like have individual performance goals, period, at all. But also I don't even want to have team goals of like closing tickets or features being used or something like that. Because the outcomes that matter are much bigger than our team. The outcomes that matter are like people are happy, people are recommending our software, people are giving us money so we can continue to work.
Yeah.
And there's so much more to that than anything our team can do. If we focus only on a goal that our team can directly influence, is too small. But do notice these things. Notice how often you deploy. Notice, someone told me after the keynote that they count the number of commits across the 300 developer org per day.
Okay.
Notice when that goes down.
Yeah.
And be like, well, maybe we should just take off the week between Christmas and New Year's because nobody's doing anything. notice things like, okay, our trend of being able to deliver meaningful features is downward. Mm-hmm. Can we stop and work on architecture or organization or whatever it's going to take to remove obstacles, increase feedback loops to help us maintain some level of developer speed? Because the natural trajectory of software is ossification. Add features until it's this big wad that you can't change anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as more people use it, it gets harder to change too. That's kind of a plus. The part where people use it is a plus. So
yeah.
I'm willing to live with that.
Exactly. It's better to have something that people use, right?
Yeah,
right?
But measure things. Inject the clues, the observability in there so you notice who's using this feature. Mm-hmm. And then you can go back to product or product can do the query themselves and talk together about, is it because it's too slow? Are they actually not interested? Do mm-hmm. they not find the button? Do they hit the button all the time, but mostly it's accidental?
And then use those insights to actually
create
action that iterate, yeah, in a way that matters.
Because we're never done. The game, we don't want the game to end. We want to continue having a useful product.
Love that. Well, while the game might never be done, I think eventually YAO will unfortunately end. So thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate
it.
Thank you.
It was great.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.